Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush, recorded live here at Walmart Spark VIP Lounge. I'm your gracious host, Chris Denson. You have a very penetrating gaze. Everybody, J.F. Bouchard is my guest today. Say hello, J.F.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Those eyes. So I guess for starters, I would love if you just did a little bit of a 101, like, who is J.F. Bouchard? How do you define yourself?
That could be a long definition because I think the first thing that defines me is that I have many interests. One of them, the most important interest, obviously, is the fact that I'm the chairman of Sidley and co-founder. I'm also the founder and chairman of C2 Montreal, which is an innovation conference event, I should say, that's held in Montreal each year in May. And I'm also a photographer. That's a passion project of mine. And a couple of other things, I guess.
So you're not busy at all. You pretty much just lounge.
lounging around.
Well, let's start with Sidley. Because, it's definitely an amazing agency you guys have built up over, 25 years now?
Yeah, almost.
You're a young man.
We started young.
It's interesting because as I've been having conversations like, yeah, J.F. Bouchard is coming from Sidley. It's like one of those agencies that people know, but they don't fully know, right? They do some cool, just maybe explain the Sidley ecosystem, and especially, I love that you guys have put together a multidisciplinary kind of approach to problem solving for your clients. But just let's start there and explain the breadth of what Sidley is capable of.
I think the best way to do this is to go way back to the very beginning. We decided to launch this creative agency. Never having set foot in an agency ourselves. So we were students, basically, and quite honestly did not even realize that the industry was making a distinction between the various disciplines. So for us, graphic design, direct marketing, advertising, PR, design, for us it was all the same. It was we called it commercial creativity. And that's how we felt about it. We did not even understand those distinctions. So we just started working very naively in a very multidisciplinary way right from the get-go. So a client would approach us and say, I need a campaign for my chain of restaurants. And we would experience the restaurant and then come back and say, we cannot do a campaign for you. We need to redo the restaurant themselves. And we started doing that, and it turned into our thing over the years.
And how's that work? Because that's an interesting thing to go into a restaurant and it's like, no, I'm not going to do marketing for you. You need to change your whole, change your approach to your business. Why go back that deep? Like, most people take the check and do the campaign and, move on. But why take that approach to go there and make that additional suggestion, which is also risky, right? It's a risky move to say,
Well, you know what? I think that we probably think more as designers, I guess, than classical ad people. Design is so pervasive in so many things that we do. And I think a lot of the agencies actually say that to clients, but saying it and doing it are two different things. So if you tell a client your restaurant should be better and then you do nothing about it, but if you actually come back with a design and you build the place, then it's a different conversation. And again, we did this very naively and realized down the road after a couple of years, we realized that it was actually a business model that made us distinctive. And we started in a very small market. Montreal is a vibrant, creative city, but it's not an advertising mecca by any stretch of the imagination, and especially back then. So the idea for us was to basically apply creativity to all the opportunities that we could put our hands on.
So let's put it in context, because I actually did one of your experiences, one of the recent ones, which kind of crawled my social media and told me how susceptible I was to invasion of sorts, which... as a consumer was like, ooh, this is scary just to learn, but also to do. It was like, is it kind of meta where I'm like doing it and now you've also hacked into my thing? And I forget, it was a for one of the video games.
Oh, yeah.
But just kind of like, let's
watch. It was using personal data in order to create an experience.
Right, exactly.
Of course, this was authorized by users, but it was spooky nevertheless.
Yeah, right? It is super. And it's like, it's like the amount of information that you were able to pull from, you know, as an agency for that, you know, that particular client. And just before then, I'd like taken a look at the North Face, you know, sort of the film where it's like shows the challenges of everything that's North Face, right? Like mountain climbing, skiing, hella skiing, et cetera, et cetera. But walk us through a couple of examples that you kind of feel are like prizes of the Sidley output.
Well, for many clients, what we have done over the years is really reimagine the whole experience. So connecting what happens in the world of communications and what happens in the actual experience in real life is really what we're about. So what we often say is that you cannot, as a marketer, simply say things. You must be doing things as well.
Right.
And so that took us in interesting directions with clients where for some clients, we reimagined what they do online, let's say, with e-commerce. But then we would translate that into the actual stores. We would create content around that.
Right.
And that's really what gets us fired up. It's this notion of creating something that's truly immersive and that goes way beyond communications or advertising. And of course, we still... Like most creatives enjoy opportunities to create advertising, but we believe it must live in an ecosystem that's driven by experiential work a lot more than communication work.
And there's that's awesome. I mean, just that whole approach to the business. There was an interesting thing, especially for an agency that's been around for 25 years and been able to do sort of this multidisciplinary approach. There was at one point an interview I read with you where you said something to the effect of, we saw that other agencies were having challenges and we saw those as opportunities. Kind of explain even that sort of mechanic to go like, okay, here's the problem in the industry and here's how we're going to approach the fix.
Yeah, but well, from our point of view, you have to understand we came into this industry as total outsiders. So, and we started, as I mentioned earlier, very naively and had to work our way to where we are now. And basically, every single time agencies were struggling for some with something, for us, it was the stuff we were getting more easily. So, for example, at some point, Sidley was pretty much a digital shop. For about 5 to 10 years, it was mainly it was the core of what we were doing.
Right.
We were still doing other disciplines around that, of course, but digital got so big, it took years for advertising and design and architecture to actually grow and
right.
And you know, for things to be more calibrated. But basically, every challenge agencies have had in the past 20 years, it was the opportunities for us to be relevant and to bring to the table what we can do best.
Well, there's also conversely, right? There's also the way the client or the business or the outside world looks at what Sidley is, and that's kind of like the beginning conversation was like, oh, I've heard of them, and I kind of don't know exactly what they do, right? There's what's that art of persuasion that goes in, like when you guys walk into a room, because most brands want the digital shop or they want the VR group or they want the social media company. But then you say, no, we can do it all in a sense.
Well, to be honest, this is not how we approach it, because I don't think anybody can do it all. For us, it's possible to integrate many contact points. When we have the right type of client in front of us with the right challenge. But to be honest with you, Chris, it's actually a challenge for us to communicate clearly what we do. And we kind of enjoy the fact that there's a mystery around Sidley because it creates kind of a buzz, but it also creates confusion as to what we actually do.
Right.
And I think part of it is probably our own making, and that we should probably be a bit more specific about the fact that we believe that something needs to happen in the real world, and therefore we love to work with clients who believe there should be an experiential portion into what they do, whether it's events, whether it's in store, whether it's activations. But we like our work to be rooted in the real world,
right?
And maybe we should be a bit clearer in how we communicate that. But you have to understand it's a challenge, because if you walk the halls at Sidley, and
some, I've never been invited, so
next time you're in Montreal, we'll do that. But a few people have who toured the agency with us were blown away in the past, because they would walk past workstations and they would see one person working on a 1,000 room hotel that we're right. building with our team of architects, and I think it's a budget of $300 million. Then they would see another group of people working on an app, then another bunch of people working on a brand identity job, another group of people working on events. Like, they've never seen that. So finding a way to communicate that properly is not so easy. But what I would say is that the thread in through all this is this notion that we're not just about communications. We're about rooting communications into the real world in one shape or form. That's something we strongly believe in.
Well, here's what I extracted, right? We transform brands into vibrant growth platforms by crafting meaningful human experiences.
It sounds a bit bullshitty, doesn't it? I think the way I phrased it before was better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's longer, though. But at least you get a chance to explain
it. So I'll change
this, right?
It. I commit to changing it now. I'm going to make it better, I promise.
No, it's not bad. I mean, because I believe in the human experiences. I don't believe in, like, oh, there's a medium. Let's figure out how we do this on there. It's like,
no, the human experience part I really like, actually. That's the part I like in this sentence. The word transform, we hear it all the time now, but... and it's something that we share with some of our, we're part of a group called Q,
yeah.
Which is a collective of companies. And in that group with us is the famous design firm IDEO.
Yes.
And of course, these guys have written the book on what it means to create human-centric design solutions.
Maybe they can help you with this phrase.
Yeah. Actually, this maybe we picked it up from
the, hey guys, we need your help.
But seriously, that's something that we share.
Right.
We don't like talking about consumers that much. Our belief is that we should always adapt our thinking depending on whether we're talking to a resident, a user, a parent, a fan, and to us. This requires a different mindset. Very often it requires different disciplines to
right.
be brought around the table. So we still use the word consumer, of course, as everybody else. But there's something that makes us uncomfortable, and we prefer to look at it from this more humanistic point of view.
No, that's great. And I mean, I think with most brands, again, they kind of focused on the tactic versus the individual. I was just advising the Google Launchpad recently, and I've met uh-huh. with almost like 40 startups from around the world. And then I talked to the guys at Google, and I was like, you realize most of these companies have never met one of their customers. Because they're all about the digital ecosystem.
Yes.
And they've created great platforms. Like, but nobody's gone and said, like, hey, Joe, yeah. like, what is your day-to-day like? And, like, really understand who that individual is. And I think... focusing on a human experience
yeah.
from an altruistic standpoint. Like,
well, if there's one thing that the IDEO folks have made an impression on us with, it's precisely that. They're extremely good at that. So I think the whole communications industry could learn a lot from their approach.
Yeah. So kind of like taking the human experience to Montreal and C2, you know, the conference, first of all, the blending of creativity and commerce, you know, that's, for those of you listening, that's what C2 stands for, right? Creativity,
yes, that's correct.
I win a prize. but then
a ticket to C2.
But then it's like, yes, we talked about this on the phone previously, but yes, you've got great curation and programming, but there's a whole human experience to be had by being on the ground there. Kind of talk about the bridge between, yes, let's get some good people up on stage talking, but also we want to create a little bit of a spectacle, if I can say so.
Well, the belief there is that, and actually the insight came from going back-to-back to TED and then going to Burning Man. And I realized that one event had catered to my emotions, and the other event had catered to my intellect. But I was not able to have both experiences in the same event. And our belief is that in order for people to truly be inspired, absorb new ideas, the notion that this is, we believe that this is better done in a very immersive environment. So C2 Montreal is not really a conference. It's more an immersive event. So yes, of course, there are talks, but there's exhibitions, there's lots of workshops and master classes, and the whole, it's highly curated. We're currently at South by Southwest, and I'm also a big fan of South by Southwest. I'm now coming every year, but it's so
don't make a
radically
cowboy out of you yet.
Not yet. No. seriously, they're very different things, and they cater to different needs. Our own approach to things is that it's highly curated experience. Everything is beautifully designed, and people are stimulated in so many ways. Whether it's the food you eat, the site itself, we really took the concept of business event and took it to a whole new level in terms of making it an immersive experience that touches both your intellect and
well, it was one of the few places in the world that I've had in a meeting on a Ferris wheel.
Yep.
and their picture actually ended up in your Montreal newspaper, by the way. Here's this guy and such and such.
So you were having a brain date. That's
correct. Yeah, I had a brain date. Yeah. Exactly.
That's a very, very popular concept each year. It's growing like crazy.
Well, explain the brain date concept, because I love the fact that it's really, you know, highly curated networking, but you can also like go in and like, okay, here's the individuals that I want to meet.
It's basically dating for your brain. We're actually using
Tinder.
A dating algorithm.
Do these dates ever go a little bit further than the
I guess some people do, but no. But seriously, we're actually using a dating algorithm to run this program, and it's hugely popular.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because that's an interesting thought, right? There's a science behind the wonder, right? It's not just like, let's put a Ferris wheel in here for the sake of putting a Ferris wheel, or create the circus-like environment, if I can be a little bit crude about it. But I'm sure there's a human psychology science that goes into.
Oh, absolutely. And Cirque du Soleil is indeed a founding partner of C2 with Sid Lee. And now C2 is an independently ran company. But the whole idea is to elevate the notion of what an experience is almost to a science in terms of how people experience it. So we're really pushing the envelope, and we spend weeks sometimes thinking about how a concept can be discovered or embraced by our users by what we call meaningful play, for example. So we're pretty deep into trying to reimagine how you run an event with its myriad of details. It's so ridiculously complex, but I'm very pleasantly surprised to see how when you embrace this complexity and actually put on your shoulders the challenge of really creating not just the event as a whole, but almost everyone's experience, and we're almost at that point. As you probably remember, we have dozens of concierge that are assigned to our guests.
Right.
But the ratio is, I think it's one concierge per 10 attendant.
Oh, wow.
So it's the level we're getting at in terms of experience is pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. No, the couple of brain days I did have is like three people were running out and like making sure the person was available. And then, you know,
oh, that's
sure
because you're
space.
A VIP. It's different.
That's true. You know?
I'm just kidding.
I'm like, I think I was the third black person there. So, I was like, oh, there's a black guy here. Let's make sure we take good care of him. We don't want bad reports. No, but and even with that brand, right? C2 has been around for how long now?
It's going to be the sixth year next May.
So year seven, right? You start to evolve, right? C2 is going global. What's that like, and why even bother to take it global? Why not just keep doing it in Montreal and just walk us through a little bit of that thinking?
Well, we want Montreal to be the flagship and the place where we incubate the new concepts and then move them around the world. But what's happening is that a lot of people have asked us if we could do similar events in their own country or city. And we kind of love the idea because we will be able to create a network that people will be able to leverage. And our goal is to expose talents to many audiences, not just the audience we have in Montreal. It's fairly international. There's people from 50 countries who come each year. But the notion of also going abroad, we believe, will help us tap into new creative communities. And we find that very stimulating. We expanded when we expanded Sidley abroad, it was such a rich cultural experience,
right,
that now we're hoping to do the same with C2, but in different countries and different cities.
That's awesome. And good luck.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge.
Exactly.
Based on my Sidley experience, I can tell you that it's always a challenge to expand globally.
But you seem very cool, calm, and collected. Like, what's your approach to like just managing all these things? And we like, and just so the audience knows, we haven't even touched on like the Sidley Collective, which is your arts inc, you know, and business incubator, and just the other things that are part of your ecosystem.
Yeah,
what's yours? Like we were joking earlier, you're like, I got to go for a run later just to wake myself up. Like, what's your no, but, where do you find
put
your
put
own
simply
internal
the our. Our whole approach to management is really to see the leadership as a collective. And Sidley has been like this for the longest time. We have 50 partners at Sidley. That's a lot of partners. And we now became part of Q about 2 years ago, which also considers itself as a collective. And people work together, but in a very informal way. But what that means is that by being generous and making a lot of people stakeholders in the adventure limiting the level of hierarchy in the company, we've created this collective mindset, and that means that my role historically has been to be the almost the MC of the collective, and now it's
like, yeah, put your hands in there.
I did a bit of that. trust me. And now my partner Bertrand is CEO, so he's got more of that to do. I'm now chairman, but the leadership of the company and Philippe, who's the chief creative officer, we've been together for the longest time. But it's not just a couple of people. It's actually a large group
right.
of people. So with 50 partners taking care of business, you can actually go for a run at the end of the day. It fits the schedule.
It has to. I think you just kind of need it. Kudos to you for building that sort of ecosystem. Was there ever a point in time where you're like, this isn't going to work?
We had our issues, but not the collective. That's
right.
The one thing that that stood firm even through the worst storms. So this we always it was always our strength. But I remember vividly the .com crash. It was not so good that week. We had to let go 100 people. My ex-wife divorced me. And it was September 11th. So it was really, really bad week for me. Terrible week. Terrible week. But, you know, with great people around around me, we just plowed through and survived through the ordeal.
What does it teach you, like, when you go, like, because there's always going to be a next time, right? Even though that was a bad week.
Yeah.
Did you have a divorce party, or did you, did you cry?
I did not get divorced again, so that's
okay.
That's
good. Yeah. So, but you, I think for most entrepreneurs and most businesses, like, building up that resiliency over time is like, all right, every storm you encounter. Actually, I mean, it's cliche, but it makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Even though it's awful in the midst of it, like, you know, what sort of grit did that give you, or resilience, or prepare you for the next challenge?
Well, I think Sidley, for the company itself, it was really about, because we had steered away a bit from our love of multidisciplinary thinking because digital got so big, as I was alluding to a bit earlier. So we sort of re-embraced our true passion, which is this experiential approach to things and mixing disciplines. So we made sure from that point on that the balance between the various disciplines was right. So I think at the professional level, that was a great learning. On the personal level, the one thing I realized that it was a bit of a shock to me back then. But I realized that I was not managing my properties right, priorities right. I saw them I saw them vertically. So at the top would be work, although I pretended it was family. It was not true. And then after that, probably yes, family. After that, my wife. After that, my friends. After that, my health, etc.
Right.
From top to bottom. And of course, what happens in the day is you never get to the bottom. So sure enough, the business was doing great until it crashed. Of course, my wife left with the tennis coach. My kids didn't see me. I was overweight. I didn't see my friends.
Yeah.
And then I realized I will never manage my life again like this. Priorities should be something that's horizontal.
Right.
And you go from right to left, and you make sure that every single one needs to be catered to every single day. So that's how I run my life now. It has made a huge difference to bring a bit more balance into the life of an entrepreneur.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. I interviewed a guy by the name of Jason Maiden, who was like the head of global brand design for Jordan for 14 years. And I asked him something similar, like about work-life balance, because he's on the road a lot. Like, obviously, the Jordan brand does some phenomenal things.
Yep.
And he was like, there's no such thing as work-life balance. He's like, I make sure, so it's very similar to what you're saying. It's just like, I take my family with me where I can, or if I stay connected to them, you know, even when I'm on the road, there's a lot of FaceTime. There's, you know, it's all life, you know, there's no work-life balance. It's just, it is life.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, all right, here we go. You ready for me to read?
Yes.
I'm an excellent reader.
No, I'm getting a
me
bit
talk
nervous.
Pretty one day.
I wonder what you picked up.
You're under arrest. No, just kidding. You're not under arrest. In the past, tribes existed for the purpose of survival and grew out of geographical proximity. Today, modern tribes form for radically different reasons. The way technology and the social fabric are evolving allows the development of often misunderstood groups whose members are drawn together to share their very special interests. So this was about your art exhibition, your photography exhibit, Secret Societies. And the reason I pulled that one out, because I also feel like that really speaks to, like, marketing demography, right? Like, what we look at, like, 18 to 24-year-old male is probably the wrong lens to look at marketing anyway. But you've kind of captured it in this kind of, like, subculture photographic sense. Just, like, I don't know, just... What's your lens, no pun intended, from a photography standpoint, and how's that tie back to, like, your own, you know, the business day-to-day stuff?
Well, it's there's probably a couple of topics in there. First thing you should know is that before I started my career as a student, I was dating between going to law school and going to art school to study photography. So this is something that goes way back. And through my 20s, because I had no balance between my personal life and my work life, I
don't think
sort
any 20-year-olds have balance, by the
way. Just... I sort of forgot about this passion of mine, and I re-embraced it about a decade ago. And what I'm interested in is to capture the humanity of people who sometimes are perceived as being marginal. And of course, it used to be that very marginal people were by themselves all alone. Now they're by themselves with a lot of other people because they can actually connect. So it has changed this reality. And I love documenting that. So now what I do in photography is a mix between contemporary art and documentary work.
Yep.
So I've shown my work in various galleries in a couple of festivals and biennales around the world. So that's something that I get really excited about, and not just because I love photography, but because I really, really believe in a concept of having passion projects that are aside from your normal day-to-day work. And that's precisely the reason why we created the Sidley Collective that you were mentioning bit earlier. Sidley Collective, the concept is quite simple. We fund projects, that personal projects. We're not talking about business startups or that type of stuff. It has to be artistic. It's got to be a personal project. It has to be a project that's done with collaborators. It cannot be a solo project. But that's pretty much the only rules that exist.
Right.
And when we like the project, we fund the production of the project, and we also allow people to put 10% of their time.
Is it internally for employees, or is it?
Yeah, but so very often employees will reach out to people outside of Sidley, and which is perfectly fine. So we're doing many projects. So this has been running for a long time now. So we've done, you know, we've done music compilations.
But why?
Don't
you have enough
exhibitions? it's
I love
furniture,
it.
All kinds of stuff. It's crazy.
And why is that? Like, why is that part of your company culture? Right? You don't hear that very often. Like, hey, make this marketing campaign, and also if
More and more companies understand, and of course Google is famous for that, allowing employees to spend up to 20% of their time on personal projects. The belief is that people who have passion projects are passionate people, so they're the people you want to keep. Plus, it creates a space where you can really experiment. And there's a couple of things that actually turned into businesses over time for Sidley, because we ended up getting acquainted with, let's say, a new discipline, we've had more than one clients coming to us and say, hey, I want, you know, something of a bit like what you do for Sidley Collective for my own brand, and ended up collaborating with our own clients within Sidley Collective, which is not the intent, by the way. It's not a business development tool. It's a talent development and retention tool. So, but the motto of the program is proudly wasting time and money since 1993. So the idea is not to make it, we don't want it to be too strategic. We want it to be a bit goofy and all over the place. And, you know, sometimes some of the craziness sticks and it turns into something potent for us. But it's really a byproduct of simply having a super cool program for people.
I think it's great, because I think most businesses are so focused on KPIs. Like, if we implement this program, it better yield something, right?
Yeah.
If we're going to put
money, we also have KPIs for Sidley Collective. We really need to waste. Last year it was $500,000. So
That's a good KPI.
We achieved it. Yeah, we achieved it. I can report we did it.
We lost
my
all the money
confirms
we targeted to.
That's
an easy goal to accomplish, though. It's easy to waste time and money.
Well, you know what? It does make sense for us, obviously. But there's so many creatives, you know, talk about the projects that they would want to do or that they started and did not finish, that drives me crazy. And the people who know me, especially my partners, they know that I'm a finisher of things.
Right.
So when I hear people who talk about their creative dreams and do nothing about them, it drives me nuts. And part of why Sidley Collective exists is to eliminate any form of excuse that people can come up with.
That's great. Because that's one of the things that irks me too, especially if you're given like good advice or you have all the tools at your disposal to move that idea to the next phase.
Yeah.
It's like, then why not? And if you can be a catalyst in that environment, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to manage a team, and we would do every Thursday, we'd do a 2.5 hour brainstorming that is called Thunder Thursdays.
Okay.
And it was like,
that's pretty cool.
Bring in an idea and nothing about the company. Like, okay. And so people would just cut, like, but 60% of the stuff that came out of those sessions
ended up
being really great for the company to use, right? Like,
whether
it's cultural or like product or whatever. So
I think it stems from the same belief, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. So we're at this Walmart Spark VIP lounge. There's a VR shopping experience.
There's a lot going on, actually. I was pretty blown away when I walked in here.
Look at these people here just waving out the window. I feel like was it the MTV VJs?
When that's it. Yeah.
People are like standing outside the glass.
Just
nobody knows
just
who
less
I am.
Cool.
Exactly. Wait, thank you. Appreciate that. This interview's over, guys. So thank you. No, I think there's a lot in the world to see just in general, right? Like VR, robotics, the artistic stuff that you guys have kind of approached and even adding technology to that. So I'm wondering what your current innovation crush is. Like, what's the thing that that kind of is giving you goosebumps today?
Well, it's going to sound very cliche, but one thing that surprises me being at South by Southwest 2 years in a row is how rapidly buzzwords seem to disappear, to be replaced by new buzzwords. And of course, they're not just buzzwords. They're actual concepts that are evolving in the world. But
when I'm drinking, by the way, I call them buzzwords.
I'm sorry?
When I'm drinking...
Yeah,
a little too much. I call them buzzed.
So
sorry to waste your time.
I was looking at I was booking my schedule, and last year I think a talk or a session out of three was about VR, and this year it's the same but with AI. And find it, you have to look for it if you want to find AR this year.
Yeah, yeah.
But we started working
AI or AR.
I'm sorry, VR.
Okay, all right.
So I'm saying last year was all VR. This year it's all AI. And we actually started working at C2 on creating VR workshop sessions and VR talks. And it's something we started working on about a year ago. And now we're deep into actually making it work. And then you realize that we're going to be talking about it for many years to come before it actually is something that can be scaled up and that can work properly. So my crush is about the follow through on some of the things that get hyped. I like the deep dives to go from, ooh, let's talk about this.
Right.
It's exciting, to going to, knee deep into going from excitement to actual delivery of things that that can work in the real world. That's what gets me excited.
Because any idea is only as good as it gets executed.
Well, right? It's like going back to the finisher thing in me, that's definitely something that's important to me.
Well, one thing I wanted to touch on as we wind down, you mentioned Q a couple of times.
Yeah.
I would love just for you to explain what that program, I know it's like based out of a Japanese organization, and then this whole collective about incubating ideas.
Yeah,
but
well, actually, Q is a unit that's part of HDY Holdings, which mm-hmm. people don't know, but it's owned by the Akuodo group, and that's better known. There's actually quite a few folks from Akuodo here. So Akuodo is both an agency and a holding group, And Q is part of that. But what's really interesting about Q is that the vision is to build a completely new form of advertising holding company. Actually, they refuse to call it a holding company. And I think they're right, because it's not about holding companies. It's about shepherding them into the future by making people work together very closely. So they wish to build a very new form of parent company.
Right.
So that's what we joined, and now we love the approach, because it's truly a collective where none of the usual politics and you know, financial administrative complications exist. There's none of that. And it's very stimulating intellectually. So the people who are in the group right now are IDEO. There's SY Partners, brilliant consultants in creative leadership transformation. There's the very hot digital shop, Digital Kitchen, the branding firm Red Peak, a behavioral economics firm called BE that's based in Toronto. So it's pretty exciting what's shaping up. And the vision of Q is to form a relatively small company with about, and that's why it's called, Q means sphere, round in Japanese. It also means...
My Japanese is a little rusty.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah. that's the only word. I think it's the only word I know. It also means the number 9. And that's pretty much a number of companies that will be joining the group over time. And the vision is to help not just business, but also society. So our motto is creativity that propels business and society forward. And when you look at the work that the companies do, it is true. It's not just commercial.
Right.
A large portion of the work that's done is social work and the intersection between both. And that makes things very, very interesting. So it's shaping up. It's only 2 years old. But the progress that has been made in 2 years is breathtaking, in my opinion. So it's pretty exciting.
Every time you say something, like I feel so warm. But also because there's this thread of creativity that you talk about, right? And I'm curious as to what's the Jean-Francois Bouchard definition of creativity. Like, what's your personal take on it? Like, where does it? Kind of, where's the arrow in the heart for you in your work and business, play, life?
Well, to me, I'm not sure it's a definition, but I think what nourishes my own creativity the most is the notion of blowing up borders between disciplines, and not just disciplines, but also between business and art, between what's social, what's commercial, between cultures, between genders. So this whole notion of refusing the boundaries,
right,
that are very often imposed on us unconsciously or consciously, that's something that goes very deep for me. And again, when we started our careers, people were basically laughing at us because we were not coming from the industry. We were good at PR, so we got visible very early. But they were like, "Who are these guys? You know, they are architects and then app developers, right, and well, apps. That's probably a bit more recent. But we would do an e-commerce site and then try to do a store, and right, then a campaign. So, and to be honest, at some point, pretty much everything sucked. So average at pretty much everything. But at some point, we got our groove because all the experiments in the various disciplines ended up being a case of 1 + 1 = 3, where what we were learning creatively in one discipline made us better in the other discipline.
Yeah.
But that took a while. So people were basically, we were the laughing stock of our industry for a while in our own little market in Montreal. And but we deep down we knew that if one day you work as a designer and then the following day you make an effort to also be a UX guy, and then right. the next day you try to figure out interior design, at some point all these creative experiments will take you to a better place.
Right.
So I guess that's what I'm passionate about. And C2 Montreal is a reflection of that as well, because this is a place where obviously we celebrate creativity. That's what it's about. But we do it by bringing people from all walks of
right.
life.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is something that's very fundamental for us.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think that really like echoes life, right? Where you go through all these trials and errors, and for I always say like career wise, some of us knew we wanted to be doctors at the age yeah. of five. And there's some of us who like, nah, let's just keep trying and figuring different. This is my personal journey, so maybe yeah. tears start to fall. Don't just ignore them. But no, it's just like eventually it starts to all make sense. All the things that either you got laughed yeah. at or didn't quite work out the way you expected, start you go like, oh, here's my take on that. And then it really just takes off, right?
Yeah.
And you guys are, what, 600 employees or somewhere
yeah,
around,
yeah,
around
that? Yeah, about that, yeah.
So kudos to you for sticking with the journey yeah. and persevering.
Yeah, plus adding the you know, experimenting in terms of disciplines is one thing, but also experimenting with different cultures. You know, we work in many countries around the world. We have offices in New York, L.A., of course, Montreal, Toronto, and Paris, but we were probably in, I'd say, in 25 countries around the
wow.
world. And we learned so much from that as well. It's so enriching, but of course, sometimes it's also a bit painful. We've had our fair share of very painstaking experiences, but it adds up to a richer understanding, I think, of the world.
So yeah, and the human experience.
Better. Yes, absolutely.
So last but not least, complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is
mixing things up. No doubt about it.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great. Where can people find out more about you, Sid Lee, C2, Sid Lee Collective, your photography?
You should probably look up because it's coming soon. You should probably look up C2 Montreal online. But you know, if you have questions or if you want me to hook you up with the right people at C2, you can just use my Twitter handle, which is JF Bouchard. So JF Bouchard, simply, and I'll
Bouchard.
Correct.
Yes.
So yeah, feel free to drop me a line, and I'll be glad to help you out.
You know, people online can't spell. They're just like, right. Have you ever looked at YouTube comments? You'd be like, what is wrong with people?
Yeah.
So
especially
thank you.
Especially a French name.
Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
Ivan is the suave creative director of the Pen and Pencil ad agency.
And I always swipe right.
He just can't help himself. And everyone would love him if he weren't such a narcissist.
I have big plans for my Peace, Love, Windex campaign.
Do you work with someone like Ivan? If so, we want your story on our new show, I Hate My Boss. Call us at 424-224-5711. And tell us your favorite story or give us your question about how to deal with the lovable egomaniac who's always taking credit for your work. I Hate My Boss. Workplace drama, comedic relief. Subscribe today on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Is he single or... I'll rephrase. Is he down?